the fifth kind. Check out our official website at www.thefifthkind.com, where you can sign up to receive our latest newsletters, stories, and select featured content that is only available on alternative platforms. Genesis 6. When the human population on earth began to grow, and daughters were born to them, the Bene Elohim saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and took any of them they chose. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, when the Bene Elohim went to the daughters of men, and had children by them. These were the heroes of old, men of renown.
Now, whether he goes to the Genesis 6 story, or the Greek story, or the story from the book of Enoch, which expands the Bible story from Genesis 6, what we're looking at is stories of hybridization. And their explanation for these giant hominids is that there was some hybridization happening between Homo sapiens and something else. The giants were the result. The hybrid claim is part of the Minoan story, Norse story, Celtic, Vedic, Greek, and biblical narratives, with the earliest written narrative of human hybridization existing in the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh.
In 2002, a U.S. Special Operations Unit, the Army Green Berets, encountered a giant hominid in the Kandahar Mountains of Afghanistan. Their engagement with the giant left one of the unit dead, and the story of this engagement echoed through the rank and file of the Allied forces.
The background to this story is that a military unit had gone missing in the Kandahar mountain range of Afghanistan. The Army Green Berets is an elite military unit, and it was sent in to hopefully locate and retrieve the missing unit. They'd received no troops in combat notification. The unit had just gone silent and gone missing. Either they could be located and retrieved, or at least the Green Berets would find out what had happened to them. Well, they flew out to within four clicks of the last known location of that unit and searched for several days before they began finding evidence of the unit's presence in that area. And as they followed a mountain trail, they began to find bits and pieces of military equipment, and then fragments of military uniform, and then fragments of bone.
Primed for a potential ambush, the Green Berets arrived on a plateau surrounded by cave entrances. Having taken a defensive position, the unit is met by a huge spear shot out of one of the caves, impaling Dan, one of the Green Berets. Suddenly, the assailant runs out of the cave, screaming and howling. A red-headed, red-bearded man of about 12 to 13 feet tall. The giant man pulls the spear out of Dan's body, only to be gunned down by 30 seconds of artillery fire.
Two helicopters were sent out to retrieve Dan's body and the body of the giant, who it was noted was red-haired, had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. Now, this account has been publicly confirmed by the C-130 pilot who flew the giant's remains out of that location and ultimately to a research facility. And all this information was part of the original after-action report.
Having filed its after-action report, the Green Berets unit was required to rewrite the report and to sign non-disclosure agreements to classify the details of the encounter.
Now, the reason I take this account seriously is, firstly, because of who the account comes from. One of the Green Berets dispatched and involved in the engagement, and the C-130 pilot who has gone public 16 years after the event to confirm the details of this story. Secondly, because it's not the only account of giant sightings in Afghanistan from that period and in the years since. The reason a lot of people don't take the report seriously is nothing to do with the credibility of the witnesses or the sources, but because there is a ridicule factor around any story of giants in the 21st century. Now, it wasn't always the case, but right now our culture is in a place where any story of a giant encounter has to be treated as a joke. And even people who have credible information from credible witnesses who wish to tell this story, very often they'll do it, but treat it in a joking way because they think people simply won't accept a story about a giant in the 21st century. I have a third reason to take this story personally, and that is the number of people who have come to me personally with first-hand experiences of this kind and second-hand experiences of this kind. Now, if you are in the Defense Forces and you have an anomalous encounter like this, it is your responsibility to log the account, just as the Green Berets did on this occasion. Now, you may be asked to redact it. You may be asked not to file a report from time to time. But usually the first step is you log it, and the second step is you never talk about it again. Where does that leave the people who've had these experiences? And so from time to time, I'm contacted by people in the military, people who are veterans, people who've been in the theater of war. And very often they'll say, I need to get my head around something I've been hearing from my peers. That's often how it's framed. Because once you've had that encounter, you can't ask the higher-ups about it. You must never talk about it again. So you can only talk to very trusted peers. And once you've done that, where do you go? And it was for this reason that from the 1960s on, Erich von Däniken would have people in the military, in the Defense Forces, in NASA, come to him with questions about the credibility of reports they were hearing, or maybe even to process things they'd experienced themselves. They couldn't go to the higher-ups, they could talk to their peers, and after that they had to go outside the organization, even to the extent of Erich von Däniken being invited to come and speak to groups of people within NASA about the research he'd been doing at that time. Barry Dowling in the 1960s had the same experience with members of the Royal Air Force, whose job was to log UFO encounters, but then not ask questions about them. And so they would go to Barry Dowling and say, can you help me process this thing I've heard or that I've experienced? In the USA, members of defense who have anomalous experiences will often go to Linda Moulton Howe, whose catalog of these kinds of experiences is probably second to none. Now that's my experience. Since publishing the Eden series, I have people coming to me in exactly the same way, and people who were engaged in Iraq and in Afghanistan have come to me with questions about anomalous phenomena that they or their peers have experienced while on active duty. And they ask me, what's the credibility of it? And for that, I go to my own field of research, which is ancestral narratives. And if we're asking the question, is there any credibility to the idea of contact between Homo sapiens and other forms of hominid, some of whom may be smaller, some of whom may be much larger? If we listen to our ancestors, yes, there's every credibility to that. But where has the culture of ridicule come from? Today we know that our distant ancestors shared the planet with a whole range of hominids in the deep past, ranging from the hobbit-sized Homo floresiensis to the Gigantopithecus, 12 to 13 feet in height. Gigantopithecus is believed to have gone extinct some 300,000 years ago. But is that the end of the story? How recently have we shared the planet with giant hominid survivors? In the 19th century, when giant skeletal remains were found, they were reported by the press in a totally matter-of-fact kind of way. There was no ridicule factor around it. There was a wonder factor. What are these? Who are these people? How are they so different to us? And when were they living in this place? That was the spirit of inquiry that surrounded anomalous finds at that time. That culture has shifted. But there was so little ridicule factor around it that Abraham Lincoln, a budding politician prior to his presidency, felt completely free to make a reference to the giants who lived in the country in the region of the Niagara Falls. And in a public speech, he said this:
"It calls up the indefinite past. Then as now, Niagara was roaring here. The eyes of that extinct species of giants, whose bones fill the mounds of America, have gazed on Niagara as ours do now."
Can you imagine a politician in the 21st century being willing to say that? It wouldn't happen, because our culture has shifted to a place where that person must now be regarded as an idiot because they believe there were giant hominids on this continent in the past. Now, that is very strange, given that we know about the diversity of hominids in the past. We know about Neanderthals. We know about Gigantopithecus. We know about Homo floresiensis. We know about the Denisovans. What then is the controversy in saying they lived here and in raising the question, how recently have we shared the planet with them, and might there be any survivors?
Writing in the early 100s of the Common Era, Pliny, the Roman governor of Bithynia, in a letter to the Emperor Trajan, makes a passing reference to a giant of 9 feet 9 inches in height. That's 2.97 meters tall. He had been brought from Arabia to Rome, where he was feted as a demigod. Pliny's near contemporary, the Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, makes references to the giants recorded in the annals of Jewish history: the Anakim, the Nephilim, the Emites, the Gittites, and the Rephaites. Josephus also references the following accounts from the Jewish history: a giant named Ishbibenob, who was carrying a bronze spear that weighed about 3.5 kilograms, and who was wearing a new sword, thought he could kill David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to David's help, attacked the man, and killed him. 2 Samuel 21, 16-17. Another battle took place at Gath, where there was a giant with 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot. He was a descendant of the ancient giants. He defied the Israelites, and Jonathan, the son of David's brother, Shammah, killed him. Those who were killed by David and his men were descendants of the giants at Gath. 1 Chronicles 20, 5-8. In his retelling of the story, Josephus attributes a height of 8 feet, 2.75 meters, to the giant victim of David's nephew Jonathan. Referring to a battle in Joshua's time, he says, "At that time there were still giants whose bodies were so large and whose faces were so different to normal people that they were shocking to look at and struck terror when you heard them. The bones of these men are still on display to this very day."
Now, it's interesting that Pliny references giants in his own day. Josephus references bones present in his own day. And he relates those to biblical narratives and says that these giant figures are probably what the Greeks were talking about in their stories of the Titans. So he's identifying Greek legend and saying, "I think that's history." He's identifying biblical mythology and saying, "I think that's history." And he's saying that we have physical evidence in the present that refers back to this historical experience where we have shared the planet with giant hominids.
Genesis 6. When the human population on Earth began to grow, and daughters were born to them, the Bene Elohim saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and took any of them they chose. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, when the Bene Elohim went to the daughters of men, and had children by them. These were the heroes of old, men of renown.
Now, whether he goes to the Genesis 6 story, or the Greek story, or the story from the book of Enoch, which expands the Bible story from Genesis 6, what we're looking at is stories of hybridization. And their explanation for these giant hominids is that there was some hybridization happening between Homo sapiens and something else. The giants were the result. Now, we might wonder how you can hybridize a regular human being and produce a giant offspring, because that is the story of Genesis 6, the book of Enoch, and it's retold in Greek mythology as well. And this is only a suggestion, this is just a speculation. But I used to live in Canberra, where we had a liger and a tigon at our zoo. Now, a liger is a giant cat whose dad is a lion and whose mum is a tiger. And a tigon has a dad who's a tiger and a mum who's a lion. Now, the liger is much, much bigger than the lion, because in lions, the growth inhibitor is carried by the female lion. And in tigers, it's carried by the male tiger. So if your mum is a tiger and your dad is a lion, you are going to grow much, much bigger than a lion. And so it's possible that we might have hybridized with others very similar to ourselves, because in the theory of panspermia, all life in the cosmos is related. We might have hybridized with Denisovans, with Neanderthals, and the baby might come out a completely normal size, but if there's no growth inhibitor, then as long as the pituitary gland is registering night and day, that person is going to keep growing and growing and growing throughout the whole course of their life. And it's just a speculation that this is how we might have hybridized and produced cousins who turned out to be much bigger than we are. Of course, the question remains, when did that happen? We now know there was crossbreeding between Homo sapiens, sapiens, and Homo sapiens Neanderthalus. We now know there was hybridization between us and the Denisovans. What other parts of the story have yet to emerge?
Nevada, USA. In 1911, in Nevada's Lake Lahontan region, three hominid skeletons were found in Lovelock Cave. The hominid remains had red hair and were 10 feet in height.
This find correlated with the local lore of the Paiute people, who spoke about the Siteka, giant red-haired people who had arrived from overseas on boats of reeds in the deep past. The Paiute story stretches back thousands of years.
In the 16th century, Spanish conquistador Pedro Cies de León noted the Peruvian mythology concerning red-haired giants. He noted in his journal the indigenous story of their arrival. They came in rafts of reeds in the manner of large boats. Some were so tall that a man of ordinary height would reach to their knees. In Peru, they were called the Paracausa, strong people from the ocean. In Mexico, their hybrid descendants were called the Toltecatl, the city builders. In Georgia, USA, the Paracausa were known as the Paracusate. In 1939, archaeologist Robert Warchop discovered an ancient settlement in the Allatoona Mountains of Georgia. The remains he found were of human-like beings,
but with a far larger cranium than that of a Homo sapiens. In 1947, an archaeologist for the Smithsonian excavated the entire settlement, unearthing more than 1,000 skeletons, all exhibiting anomalously large craniums. According to the Hebrew tradition, there were giants in the lands of various kinds, the Gathites, the Riphaites, the Nephilim, the Anakim. Now, the Anakim were the descendants of the giant king Anak. Anak has a counterpart in Islam, the female Anak. Her son is Uj. Now, in the Hebrew tradition, Uj is Og. And the Bible notes that Og was so large that his bed was 13 feet long by 6 feet wide. In Greek mythology, we find the giant king Anax. So we have Anak, Anak, and Anax. And Anax was the progenitor of the Anactorians, a race of giants reputedly 15 feet tall. He wasn't the only giant in Greek mythology. I remember traveling in Greece and going to Knossos and being told about the Minoan culture that had produced these anomalously advanced buildings, seemingly from out of nowhere, full of technology. And when I asked the guide the explanation for their advancement, he said, well, the Minoans, their progenitor was a hybrid being, part human, part something else. And that was Minos, a giant. And so we have these repetitions from culture to culture, and some of the details repeat as well. Six fingers, six toes, red hair, double rows of teeth. What is the reason for those correlations? It seems to me that the similarity of the names, Anak, Anak, Anax, Anakim, Anunnaki, Parakausa, Parakusate, suggests to me the possibility of real cultural memory of real encounters with hominid neighbors who were gigantic. There's no controversy in saying Gigantopithecus used to live alongside other forms of hominid. The question is there any possibility that some of these other forms of hominid have survived to the present? If the ancient stories of giants are rooted in ancestral memory, it would be reasonable to expect giant remains to have been found. Giant human-like remains have indeed been found, and in particular in the Americas. In the USA, between 1819 and 1859, giant remains were unearthed in Missouri, Ohio, West Virginia, Iowa, California, and Pennsylvania. These finds were reported in the newspapers and for a time were curated by the Smithsonian Institute before being repatriated. But what exactly were they? The height of 9 to 13 to 15 feet is anomalous, and details like six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, plus double rows of teeth or molar-type teeth, suggest something other than Homo sapiens. And it's intriguing that these details do repeat in contemporary reports and contemporary finds. The red hair, the height, the number of fingers, the kinds of teeth, these details repeat in biblical descriptions, in Josephus 2,000 years ago, and out of Kandahar in our own period. What do these correlations mean? Where do these giant hominids fit into the picture? What would be deeply informative would be a DNA analysis of the Allatoona finds or any of the putative 19th century finds or any artifacts from the Kandahar encounter. Would the results be human or another kind of hominid or a hybrid of human and something else? The hybrid claim is part of the Minoan story, Norse story, Celtic, Vedic, Greek, and biblical narratives, with the earliest written narrative of human hybridization existing in the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh. In 2003, an extraordinary opportunity presented itself to test the historicity of the Sumerian claims of hybridization
and giants.
Now, this opportunity arose because immediately prior to the Allied incursion into Iraq in 2003, Jörg Fassbinder had identified the probable site of Gilgamesh's tomb. Now, to be clear, in the Sumerian story, Gilgamesh was a hybrid, part human, part sky people, or Anunnaki. If we could find his tomb, we could begin to test that story. Gilgamesh was a giant. We could observe how large was the sarcophagus, and if there was any biological material there that could be DNA tested, let's do that. What would we find? Would it be purely human, or would it be human hybrid? Because there you can either verify or falsify the ancient story. If you find that it's merely human, now we know how to read those Sumerian stories. It's fable, it's fiction. If Gilgamesh was something else, we have to go back to the Sumerian stories and look again and ask what real memory is being carried by these narratives. Prior to the incursion into Iraq, Jörg Fassbinder had gone onto the BBC, had talked about the soil magnetization technology they'd used. 99% certainty, this is the tomb of the historic Gilgamesh. We can go in and investigate that whole story. And so within days of the Allies going into Iraq, there were archaeological units at that site identified by Jörg Fassbinder to do archaeological retrievals, and then everything went silent. Now, why was that? We heard nothing more from Jörg Fassbinder until a few years later, when he was talking to a French magazine, and he said, oh, we decided not to investigate further. We thought it was best to keep the site safe and bury it to prevent looting. Now, I would just ask, how likely is that? It was so important that within days of going into Iraq, that site had been secured. Military teams were there to safeguard the archaeological extraction. Do you really think that within a couple of days they just changed their mind and decided not to pursue the matter? What I'd suggest is this, that yes, they went to the site. Yes, they made archaeological retrievals, but there was no way they were going to do testing like that in public in case something very controversial emerged. If they did testing and there was nothing to see, they could publish that. If they did testing and there was something controversial, better not publish that. So I would suggest the logic is they discovered something about Gilgamesh that was not publishable. I would suggest that what they found was something other than pure human remains, that it did confirm the Sumerian story of Gilgamesh being something other than human, human plus a bit of something else. And as soon as you have that, you have to listen to other giant narratives more seriously, and you have to go back to the Sumerian stories and ask what other factual information is here, because the Sumerian stories and the stories of their daughter cultures of Babylonia, Arcadia, and Assyria are fantastical to the 21st century mind. If we take those ancient narratives more seriously, the Sumerian story puts us in a populated universe. It says we have more relatives in the cosmos than we'd ever imagined. It says that we did not evolve by chance, that we are an engineered species. And it suggests that we are capable of far more than we've yet achieved. It explains why we are ill-adapted to Earth in many ways. The only reason we're the alpha species is because we can build a shelter, make a weapon, light a fire. Where did that high intelligence come from? The Sumerian narratives have an explanation, and it has to do with hybridization. And so I think the controversy around giants is not simply to say we've had more company on planet Earth, but we've had more company in the cosmos. If we had tested Gilgamesh and found that to be authentic, the real controversy is not, oh, there were more hominids than we thought, oh, they've been around for longer. The real controversy is, who are we? Where did we come from? What is the true story of the origins of humanity, and what does that have to say about our potential as a species? Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind TV. Remember to subscribe and click on the bell for notifications so that you never miss when we upload new content. For uncensored access to our full interviews and documentaries, go to fifthkind.tv. For more videos concerning Paleo Contact and the wisdom of the world's ancestral narratives, go to the Paul Wallace channel, subscribe, and click on the bell for notifications.